Live from WRAL News Headquarters in Raleigh, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
Dozens of firefighters are on the front lines in Cumberland County trying to protect homes and property. We're at the Fire Command Center with an update on their progress.
And it's dry right now, but we do have rain on the way to end the week and the weekend. I'll show you when to expect it.
And Ken Smith here in the WRAL Live Center. The new federal investigation into the Memphis Police Department as more video in the Tyre Nichols police beating case is set to be released today.
We are monitoring two fires that are burning in our state right now this afternoon. A good afternoon to you. I'm Jeff Hogan. We'll have a live report from Gilbert Bays from one of them coming up.
And I'm Michelle McConaughey in for Renee Chu. Thanks for joining us. Right now, dense smoke is beginning to dissipate around Camp Lejeune after a large brush fire.
Yeah, Elizabeth Gardner, though, with the wind that is happening right now and what's going on with the humidity, it's making conditions just much worse to try to put some of these fires out. Right now, Elizabeth's in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with a beautiful look behind you.
It's beautiful right here in our backyard here, but you can see the trees moving around. We've had some gusts up to 20 miles per hour today, and it's also very dry. Our humidity has dropped down to about 14, or dew points dropped down to about 14, and that's going to be extremely dry. So we do have high fire danger again today because of the blustery conditions and the very dry air that has moved in. And so you don't want to do any outdoor burning again today, no matter where you are. And of course, the wind that we continue to see this morning is certainly keeping firefighters on their toes down there in Cumberland County. We take a look at what's happening next. And that, of course, is going to be the cooler air that remains across the area and then the rain that moves in on top of it. If we still have any lingering wildfires, that rain Friday night could be or Thursday night into Friday could be quite helpful. Here comes that next system, and we're looking at that system moving on in and bringing us some showers as we get into the morning on Friday. Friday morning could be a wet morning commute for us, and we'll see rain into the afternoon. After that, we see drying conditions on Saturday, but another wave of rain moves in late Sunday and is with us Sunday night and into early Monday. You can see there's Sunday at 6 p.m. That rain just started to move in, and it's with us into early Monday morning. So we're going to be watching out for that. Again, Friday, much of the day, and it will be chilly, and then Sunday we'll see late rain, and that continues Sunday night into Monday. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about the conditions that we'll see between now and then, with some temperatures potentially dropping down to freezing.
And happening now in the WRAL Live Center, as Memphis Police prepares to release more video in the Tyre Nichols police beating case, the Justice Department now plans to review the Memphis Police Department. Memphis Police just wrapped up its own internal investigation into that deadly incident. Now, the mayor of Memphis requested this federal review to include police policies, practices, and training. Five former Memphis Police Department officers are charged in Nichols' death. All five recently pleaded not guilty. Look for new reporting here on WRAL and, of course, on WRAL.com when the additional 20 hours of that police video is released.
All right, Ken, thanks for that update. This morning, dozens of first responders returned to Jordan Lake to search for a missing teenager. The boy disappeared while jet skiing with family. Sky 5 flew over the scene as crews scoured that area. WRAL's Eric Miller is live at the Farrington Boat Access Point with an update on search efforts. Eric, what do we know?
Michelle, at this point, this search has been ongoing for 16 hours now, and it is no less urgent this morning. Crews were here last night. They were back out here starting at 6:30 a.m. on the water and in the air. Just a massive operation. You take a look at some of this video here. Half a dozen agencies are at this scene, including the Chatham County Sheriff's Office, as well as State Highway Patrol. It's all started before 8 last night. That's when that 15-year-old boy had engine trouble with his jet ski. Family member on their own jet ski, they went to get a tow rope to get some help. By the time they got back, jet ski was still there, but the boy was gone. Now, within the last hour, Chatham County Sheriff Mike Robertson put out a statement. It reads, quote, "This is a difficult time for the family, especially not knowing what happened. We have multiple resources working on this, and we're doing everything we can to locate the missing teenager and provide his family with answers." And that family has been out here, dozens of family members as well as friends, watching, waiting, hoping to see what happens with this search. Obviously, developing situation. We'll bring you updates as soon as we get them. Michelle?
All right, hoping we bring that young man home safely. Eric Miller, live at Jordan Lake. Thanks, Eric. A 75-year-old man died after being hit by a car in northeast Raleigh. Police say Charles Kudla was crossing Spring Forest Road when he was hit at the intersection of Capitol Boulevard. Officers say 19-year-old Jabril Parks was driving the car that hit him. Parks is facing several charges, including misdemeanor death by vehicle.
Two Americans who survived after being kidnapped in Mexico last week are back in the U.S. Autopsies are being performed in Mexico on the two Americans who were killed. Morgan Chesky is live in Texas, where family members say the survivors are being treated for their injuries.
It has been an incredibly active 24 hours here in South Texas. We've learned that those two surviving Americans, identified by family members as Latavia Washington McGee and Eric James Williams, are recovering or believed to be inside this South Texas hospital. Meanwhile, authorities say they are still working on claiming those remains of those two other Americans in Mexico. But authorities say that they are now digging into this investigation to try to find the individuals or group responsible. Mexican authorities have reported that at least one individual was taken into custody when these Americans were rescued, described by officials as the man guarding them. We do know that the city of Matamoros and the state of Tamaulipas had been placed under a level 4 travel advisory by the State Department that makes it very clear, stating do not travel there. They had even cited cases of kidnapping and crime as a motivating factor behind issuing that warning. Right now, authorities are waiting to hear the full story from these survivors. It will be incredibly important to hear their testimony of what took place, as it could help investigators track down this group responsible. But as of right now, no individual, no group, no specific cartel has claimed responsibility for this horrific kidnapping that resulted in the deaths of two Americans. Morgan Chesky, NBC News, Brownsville, Texas.
And you into the WREL Live Center, an arrest in that murder investigation in Lee County that happened near Fat Junior's restaurant. Take a look at this mugshot here. This man, Armand Manjus Jones, is now in custody, accused of killing Calvin Richard Lester Jr. Now, Scott 5 was over the scene when we first reported on this story during a new news yesterday. Investigators say both Jones and Lester worked at Caterpillar. The deadly shooting happened in a nearby parking lot not far from Fat Junior's restaurant. Deputies say this all happened after both men got off work. No word yet on what led up to the shooting. Jones remains in Lee County Jail with no bond this noon hour.
The American Red Cross is helping people forced to flee from homes after a fire erupted around 4 p.m. Tuesday on Dudley Road. Gilbert Bays is covering efforts to contain that fire now, nearly 24 hours later. And Gilbert, we understand the low humidity and the high winds contributed to that fire spreading.
Yeah, Jeff, and those two things continue to be a factor right now. The fire, we're on Dudley Road here. You see the wooded area, some smoldering going on back there. But look how close it came right up. It burned right down to the edge here. If you turn around, you see some folks out here coming by assessing the damage you live out here. But look down Dudley Road. You can see the smoke, and we can hear the aircraft overhead kind of giving the fire folks on the ground an idea of where the flames are actually going on. This is where they set up the command center last night and continues to be where they are trying to effort to make sure this thing doesn't spread. Now, about an hour ago, the police chief, or rather the fire chief from Vander, Richard Bradshaw, took photojournalist Michael Joyner and me into the heart of where this fire was burning last night. He says several crews from multiple agencies did a remarkable job saving lives and property. Now, Bradshaw said about 10 families were evacuated and fire crews managed to save at least four homes that were surrounded by flames. One suffered some minor damage from the heat that melted the side of the house of the siding. The question right now is, where are we right now?
Well, we're dealing with low humidity again and wind, shifting winds. Supposed to be a pretty stiff wind. And again, the conditions are right for the fire to continue to burn and escalate with the potential of maybe jumping a couple fire lines.
Bradshaw says that's what they're doing right now. They're spending the morning with the plows widening the fire lanes and lines that they cut in the wooded area last night in hopes of stopping any new flames from jumping the lines. And show you how intense that fire was last night. This is a spectrum box here that got melted as the flames came through here. Now, Bradshaw says the fire is about 90% contained, but just about a few moments ago, we saw another fire engine running down Dudley Road because the fire continues to pop up. Jeff, he's warning everyone who's doing any cleanup, any spring cleaning, and possibly trying to burn some stuff, not to do that until these fire conditions improve.
A pretty dangerous time for that right now. Gilbert Bay's live in Cumberland County. Thanks for the update, Gilbert. The search is officially underway now for the new leader of the state's largest school system. North Carolina School Boards Association posted the job for the next Wake County superintendent today. On Friday, the Wake County School Board will meet for a special session focused on the search for who will fill that job. Current Superintendent Kati Moore announced her retirement last month, and the board hopes to name a replacement before she leaves July 1st.
Today is International Women's Day. The global holiday focuses on women's rights movement, bringing attention to issues such as gender equality, as well as violence and abuse against women. President Biden released a statement this morning that reads in part, "Despite decades of progress in far too many places around the world, the rights of women and girls are still under attack." His statement goes on to say that his administration is focused on lifting up the rights of women and girls in foreign and domestic policy. And Ukraine's president says pays tribute to Ukrainian women on International Women's Day. Volodymyr Zelensky released a video address today saying, quote, "It is important to express gratitude today to all the women who work, teach, study, rescue, heal, fight for Ukraine." Zelensky goes on to say that all should remember and thank all the women who gave their lives for their country.
Coming up next at noon, a question of objectivity involving a Supreme Court abortion opinion. What Democrats want to know about a former federal judge who reviewed the draft.
Also, 3D printing goes out of this world. A look at the first ever 3D printed rocket set for liftoff in an hour.
Plus, the Murdoch family is in the headlines again. The troubles facing surviving son Buster.
Download the new WRAL streaming apps on Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, and Android TV.
Last week, state lawmakers announced a deal to expand Medicaid here in North Carolina. It should bring health care coverage to nearly 500,000 people. And joining us to talk about the impact on residents, businesses, and the budget is Dr. Delon Canterbury, geriatric pharmacist and CEO of Geriatric. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Let's talk about this deal. What does this mean for North Carolina residents?
I can't lie. This is extraordinary news, especially for our clients, for patients that may reside in more rural settings. This is going to open up access to vital healthcare services, mental health services, substance abuse beds, and even funding for certain diagnostic screenings in health systems. So this really is a huge win, not just for our clients here in North Carolina, our residents, but for health systems alike. This is momentous. And we're looking at about $1.8 billion being annualized in funds for this effort from our federal government. So this is really a huge win for North Carolina.
Absolutely. And will this be an expense for our state budget, you think?
You know, it won't be for the most part. 90% of this is going to come from the federal aid. This will come from a fund dedicated for allocating basically needs in these health systems. Only 10% of our state budget will go towards this bill. And a lot of that is going to be funded from the health systems that have these assessments that will cover those costs. So really, we're not going to see too much from our direct state budget.
And what does this mean for healthcare businesses?
Just like mine, this is a huge win. One of the biggest hurdles in getting this passed was the issue of certificate of need, essentially proving to regulators from the state that you can open up a practice or buy certain equipment to help with diagnostics. And so what this means is now this is going to ease opening the market for health competitors to start their own business or their own startup and to add those vital telehealth services to really reach those people who don't have access in those rural communities and low-income communities as well.
Absolutely. And go into this a little bit more. How will this deal affect our health system and access for vulnerable populations?
you know, we are in a mental health crisis right now. And unfortunately, because of those archaic certificate of need regulations, basically the state's dictating how hospitals help people. Now we have an opening for entrepreneurial healthcare pioneers to start their own business, to help with telehealth, to help with reaching the need of people who, again, don't have access. Because of this, this will lead to competition. This will drive some costs down from our primary healthcare giants in the state and give this way for people to have choices, options that are accessible and affordable and not just confined to a couple big giants in our healthcare profit margins.
This is good news for a lot of people. Dr. Dylan Canterbury, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate you.
For sure. Thank you.
Jeff? A pharmaceutical company that makes a medication to prevent preterm birth is pulling it from pharmacies. An FDA panel says the drug Makena is not effective. Covis is the manufacturer, and the company says while it still believes the drug is effective in pregnant women at high risk of premature birth, they will voluntarily pull it off the shelves. It has been on the market for more than a decade. The exact timetable for the withdrawal is not yet clear. Key congressional Democrats want more information from a former federal judge who reviewed the Supreme Court's probe into a draft abortion opinion. An exclusive report from CNN raised questions about Michael Chertoff's objectivity because the Supreme Court did not disclose the financial relationship with his risk assessment firm. Turns out his firm has done prior work for the high court, reaching at least $1 million in payments. That's raising questions about whether he could be an objective validator.
A historic moment for the House of Representatives. Jennifer McClellan took the oath of office, becoming the first black woman to represent Virginia in Congress. She took the oath of office with a family Bible, which contained a receipt for a poll tax that her father once had to pay tucked inside. Her husband and two children stood proudly as she choked back tears. Virginia's 4th congressional district stretches south from Richmond to the state's border with North Carolina. And in less than an hour, a new generation of rockets is scheduled to lift off. Relativity Space is set to launch the world's first ever 3D printed rocket. The mission, called Good Luck, Have Fun, is the company's first orbital attempt. It'll eventually carry customers. The Tehran 1 rocket is 110 feet tall, 7.5 feet wide. The launch is expected to take off at Cape Canaveral at 1 o'clock this afternoon.
Kids at schools and people in businesses across North Carolina practiced tornado safety during a statewide drill. The drill is part of the National Weather Service's severe weather preparedness week. In late March of last year, a line of severe thunderstorms swept across the southeast, including Wake County, producing 90 tornadoes. It was the largest tornado outbreak of the year and tore the roofs off of homes here in the Triangle.
No severe weather today. It's a little windy out there. Meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner with a look at the whirly gigs in Wilson. Beautiful blue skies, though.
It's absolutely gorgeous outside, but it's definitely cool and still breezy. And yes, you can see the whirly gigs here at the Whirly Gig Park in Wilson. It always tells such a good story about days when we have breezy conditions. You can see those whirly gigs spinning around. It is 53 degrees right now, and our dew point's down at around 20, which means it's very dry out, which is why, of course, we have high fire danger again today. Our temperatures will hover in the mid to upper 50s through the afternoon and really all the way until, say, 7 p.m. before we start to drop back into the 40s. This is a look at our wind speeds and wind gusts. The wind speeds are on the left and the gusts are on the right. Our wind is coming out of the north right now, and we're gusting to 21 in the Triangle, 19 in Goldsboro, 18 in Fayetteville, and our steady winds are somewhere between 10 and 15, again, coming out of the north. So it's breezy out there, and it feels chilly, too, if you get caught in that wind. The sun makes it feel a little bit better, but it's a chilly wind that we're dealing with. And of course, that does bring us high fire danger again today. Firefighters are still fighting that fire down in Cumberland County. You want to make sure you're putting off any outdoor burning for a couple more days. Once we get into, say, Friday, we're going to see more rain, and that's going to continue on and off into the weekend. So it'll be safer to burn at that point. We wouldn't want to see any more of those fires starting. Of course, we've had such warm temperatures over the last 4 or 5 days, except for today. So our pollen counts really skyrocketed. 1379 yesterday was the highest we've ever seen this early in the season. So our pollen count is still high, but will be dropping. It's still be instead of very high today, likely to be high tomorrow, and then continues to fall as we see the cooler temperatures moving in. The pollen is triggered by warm temperatures. So when we cool down, the trees won't drop as much pollen. And of course, when we have rain, it helps to wash it out of the atmosphere. So things should be improving. We'll still, even if we get a little bit of a break from the pollen over the next few weeks with cool temperatures, we'll still probably end up with some of that into April. Our temperatures right now are mainly in the low to mid 50s, so it's cool, a lot cooler than it was this time yesterday, 15 to 25 degrees colder than this time yesterday. And we'll only hit around 60 in the Triangle, 61 Fayetteville, 58 Rocky Mount, 61 in Southern Pines. So it's a big change. 60 is our normal high, though, so we're close to that. It'll be cooler Friday with the rain that we'll see. We'll see chilly rain on Friday, and then temperatures bounce back, still below normal Saturday and Sunday. It's the morning lows that we'll be concerned about, too. We're going to drop it tomorrow morning down to 35 and then 34 on Sunday. Now, typically this time of year, we'd still be seeing freezing temperatures, but since it's been a while since we've seen any freezing, we're seeing, of course, a lot of plants and trees blooming, budding out a lot earlier than they normally do. So the Weather Service will start the frost freeze program over the weekend. It's still likely to be an issue for us tomorrow morning, but they're going to start the program this weekend. April 8th is our normal last freeze in the Triangle, and the latest is May 8th. And so, again, we do typically see freezing temperatures this time of year. This year is just different because it's been so warm so early. We're back to below normal temperatures now, and we could stay that way all the way through almost the end of March. Right now, looking at a good chance of below normal temperatures through March 21st. So Friday will be chilly and wet. We're going to see some rain late Sunday into Monday. And coming up in just a little while, I'll go over the timeline for all the rain and the 7-day forecast.
All right, thanks, Elizabeth. New technology is helping families of various kinds of victims find closure. Tonight at 5, WRAL's Monica Casey takes us through the process of solving two major cold cases from 1993 and 1998.
Libraries are valuable resources for reading and learning. Today at 4, we'll show you the ways the Durham Library goes beyond books to help people learn. One of the world's richest men is once again apologizing for mocking an employee with a disability. The issue now taking center stage of this corporate circus. Plus,
my first works were smaller works. I made them on a picnic table. Rather than doing a bit smaller work, we've just done a lot bigger work.
World-renowned sculptor and North Carolina native Patrick Dougherty has created over 300 imaginative art installations. See Patrick and other local artists during Big Night In for the Arts. That's tomorrow. In our next half hour, we'll talk with one of the organizations that will benefit from this event.
A live look this noon at Carolina Beach. Just blue skies and beauty out there. A little chilly, probably quite chilly with the wind coming off of that water right now. As you watch WRL News, available on Spectrum and the WRL app on your TV or streaming device.
Elon Musk is apologizing publicly for mocking a Twitter employee with a disability. The Iceland-based employee worked at Twitter as a senior director. The company laid off some 200 workers there, so the employee tweeted Musk, saying he no longer had access to his computer. Musk took to Twitter, saying the worker claimed he had a disability that prevented him from typing. The worker, in fact, has muscular dystrophy and has even been recognized by the UN and the president of Iceland for spearheading a charitable effort to build 1,000 ramps in Reykjavik to increase accessibility. Some Americans may be getting an unexpected tax form in the mail. Form 1099-K reports earnings from third-party payment apps like PayPal, Venmo, and Cash App. The reporting threshold is now $600. The IRS delayed the new tax rule until 2024 after receiving criticism that the changes will hurt small businesses. But some people say they are receiving the form now. Tax experts believe some companies could not adjust their systems to comply with the delay. The issue could also reflect the state you live in.
Google is working on an artificial intelligence language model that it says will beat ChatGPT. The tech giant is working on artificial intelligence that's expected to understand 1,000 languages. Google's universal speech model is trained on 12 million hours of speech and 28 billion text sentences. It's already being used on YouTube with its automatic speech recognition.
Coming up, the surviving son of Alex Murdaugh finds himself at the center of an old controversy. Why one person says the conviction calls the family story into question in a case dating back nearly a decade.
Plus, security and health checks could become more efficient thanks to a super-smelling robot trained by bugs. Yeah, you heard us right. Robots that can smell. Sort of. We'll explain. And here are your winning lottery numbers on your screen right now.
New information as our new news continues now into the WRAL Live Center. A scathing federal report about the Louisville Police Department. Now, this federal investigation was prompted by the death of Breonna Taylor. Now, the specific language in the DOJ report states Louisville police engaged in years-long practices of violating constitutional rights and using excessive force. Now, in addition, the DOJ reports Louisville police discriminated against black people in the enforcement of activities, uses excessive force, and conducts searches based on invalid warrants. Attorney General Merrick Garland calls this conduct unacceptable and heartbreaking. By the way, the warrant used to enter Taylor's home back in 2020 is now part of a separate federal criminal investigation.
We now turn to new troubles for the surviving son of Alex Murdaugh. Just weeks after taking the stand in his father's murder trial, an alleged controversy for his son Buster is surfacing. Stephanie Gosk explains how a case from 2015 could come back to haunt him.
Buster Murdaugh was at his father's trial every day. The unmistakable red hair, hard to miss.
Guilty verdict.
Now that Alec Murdaugh has been sent away for life for killing his wife Maggie and youngest son Paul, his oldest son is the only member of the immediate family left. But he's not entirely alone.
Buster's world will never be the same. He does have a very loving family and support group. I can't even imagine to lose everything in your life that you've known. Everything in your life that you've ever known.
And it is all happening under a relentless spotlight. On Sunday, according to a police report, Buster Murdaugh called the sheriff's office after seeing this photo published in an article, telling police he observed a suspicious gray Dodge Challenger outside the residence. Buster's girlfriend said the couple was being followed by the media.
How does Buster feel about your guilty?
But police can do little about the attention that grew intense during the six-week-long trial, especially after Buster took the stand in his father's defense, describing the moment he learned Maggie and Paul were dead.
I was in shock.
What kind of condition was he in? What was his demeanor?
Yeah, his demeanor was, I mean, he was destroyed. He was heartbroken. I walked in the door and saw him and gave him a hug and just broken down.
When the verdict was announced, Buster put his head in his hands. But a bystander outside the court suggested there was even more trouble ahead, as Alec Murdaugh was escorted away by police. He was apparently referring to the 2015 death of Buster's high school classmate, Stephen Smith. Smith's body was found on a rural road a few miles from the Murdaugh's sprawling property. It was ruled a hit and run, according to the pathology report. But Smith's mother doesn't believe it.
It was more than one person that done this. And somebody knows. And they set him up on that road to make it look like a hit and run. I think he was beaten to death.
That was Stephanie Gosk reporting. Authorities reopened the Stephen Smith case in 2021 while investigating the murders of Maggie and Paul. They have not officially named anyone in the Murdaugh family as a suspect.
Crews in Florida are dismantling the 400-foot-tall free-fall attraction where a 14-year-old boy slipped from his seat and fell to his death last year. Tyree Sampson was visiting Orlando for spring break from Missouri when that happened. The attraction at Icon Park has been closed since his death. The crane is expected to arrive next week to remove the ride. The operator said they hope to have it dismantled by the anniversary of Sampson's death on March 22nd.
Tonight, Chapel Hill could move forward with a controversial housing project despite concerns over coal ash. Town Council is set to discuss the next steps for a future municipal center and affordable housing on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. That same site was used as a trash pit for decades with enough toxic coal ash to fill 18 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Some have expressed health concerns for any future residents. Town officials say removing the ash would cost $16 million. They plan to cap it with clean soil instead. Tonight's meeting is at 7 o'clock. And people living in Mount Olive might notice loud noises and giant flames shooting up in the sky today. Piedmont Natural Gas says it's all part of its routine infrastructure maintenance. They'll be using a flare stack, as you can see here in pictures. You might smell natural gas and hear a whistling noise near Barker Chapel Church Road. The company says this is a controlled process and no one is in danger.
Later this month, leaders in North Carolina's largest school system will explore the possibility of attendance bonuses for bus drivers. This all comes amid a terrible driver shortage. Wake County needs hundreds of drivers to fully staff its routes, and it's made worse when any of them are absent for any reason. The school board will meet March 21st to talk about this. The cost of rebuilding one of Fayetteville's oldest schools is going up. During a meeting Tuesday, staff noted the cost of building a new E.E. Smith High School is now expected to top $100 million. That's up from the $90 million estimate last year. School officials say inflation is to blame for the rise.
UNC and NC State fans will have their eyes on Greensboro tonight as their teams try to advance in the ACC tournament. The Tar Heels will play Boston College at 7 o'clock tonight. After that, NC State will play Virginia Tech. That game is scheduled at 9:30. Duke will get its tournament run started tomorrow afternoon against either Pitt or Georgia Tech. And WREL's live coverage from the Greensboro Coliseum will get started at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Gerald Owens will be there live with pre- and post-game coverage, along with the WREL sports team.
Getting a health exam at the doctor or going through airport security could look a lot different in the future. Just ahead, how scientists in Israel are bugging a new high-tech robot to train its sense of smell.
And two wheels on the ground are now two wheels in the air. The world's first flying bike is hitting the market, but you won't find it in America. We'll explain next. And our team is working to bring you exclusive stories for coverage you'll find only on WREL. Visit WREL.com and search only. In the not-so-distant future, security and health checks could be getting a high-tech makeover. Marianne Rafferty takes a look at the biohybrid robot trained by bugs and how scientists hope to use it to keep us safe.
Robots aren't living things, but it's not stopping scientists from trying to make them come alive. Well, sort of. This is a biohybrid robot, and with the help of insects, researchers in Israel are training it to develop a sense of smell.
We combine the biological world with the electronic world.
Locusts are large bugs with fine-tuned antennae, long sensors on top of their heads used to identify and locate a variety of objects. Now lab technicians are taking pieces of those antennae and using electric signals to program the bot to respond to specific scents.
I place an antenna between two electrodes. The electrodes record the neural activity from the neurons inside the antenna as a response to smell. I have smell over here and my robot here. I run the code that activates the robot, and now I'm going to apply the smell.
According to researchers, the locust antenna makes the robot's ability to smell more sensitive than some other electronic sniffing devices. In the future, the team says their bots can be used in place of dogs to strengthen security checks, as well as help a variety of other industries.
For example, to identify explosives, to identify rotten food, to identify drugs, a cosmetic company that you want to be able to see if it's a good perfume or bad perfume.
That was Marianne Rafferty reporting. Previous research has shown how locusts can be trained to detect various cancers with their use of their antennae. Scientists hope their robot will be able to do the same.
The world's first flying bike is hitting the market. The X Turismo luxury air cruiser is currently available in Japan for a mere $555,000. The vehicle is inspired by the Star Wars franchise, weighs more than 660 pounds with a 228 horsepower motor. Four fans on the bike provide extra power and stability, but I will need a loan, Michelle.
Yeah, half a million. Why not?
Sure.
All right, tomorrow WREL will celebrate and support our amazing local arts community during the third annual Big Night In for the Arts. After the break, we'll talk with the head of one of the local arts councils that will benefit from this effort.
Plus, the big play at a soccer match wasn't a pass, shot, or even a goal. How a four-legged friend stole the show. The third annual Big Night In for the Arts is upon us, and WREL is partnering with four area arts councils to celebrate and showcase the local arts communities. It's an hour-long program featuring artists and performances taking place tomorrow from 7 to 8 p.m. Joining us to talk about how the event has benefited the Triangle is President and CEO of the United Arts Council of Raleigh and Wake County, Jen McEwen. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, Jen, although the arts industry is recovering post-pandemic now, Big Night In continues to serve as an annual opportunity to tell the story of the arts. How has your organization benefited from this effort?
This has been an incredible partnership, raising $615,000 for the four counties' arts, community, and cultural sector over the last 2 years. And we're looking to grow that number this year. It has brought financial support to our nonprofit arts organizations and local artists in a time where, even though, you know, we are emerging from this pandemic, the arts are definitely coming out of the pandemic a little slower than other sectors, mainly because the root of the mission for arts organizations is people gathering.
Yeah, a lot of folks during the pandemic had to reinvent what they were doing. You just invented this. How did the regional effort like this come about?
Well, thanks to the support of WREL, my predecessor, Charles Fanoff, worked with WREL to bring the Triangle Arts Councils together. Obviously, we don't have stiff borders here between Durham, Chapel Hill, and Raleigh, so our artists travel through Chatham, Orange, Durham, and Wake County, working in our schools, working in our cities, and making the Triangle a really fantastic place to live. So coming together to raise money seemed like a really natural fit in a time of crisis.
And you have learned this in quick fashion. We understand that you're new to the area and this position. So tell us about your anticipation.
I am so excited. I am new to the area. I've been here about 6 months working with United Arts. But the bulk of my career was spent producing theater in Atlanta, Georgia. So when I learned that Tony Award winner Beth Level was from Raleigh, I was super excited to get to work with Theater Raleigh to bring her segment to Big Night In for the Arts. I think you guys are going to be able to feel through the TV screen her incredible energy and talent and reception from the audience in the room.
So new to the area, but not new to events like this. You've done this before, and we're going to have a great lineup planned for tomorrow. Performances by Tony Award winner Beth Level, like you said, fusion folk artists Larry and Joe, social media dance superstars Costin Mayer, a live performance from Grammy-nominated country artist Reese Palmer. So we're all excited about it. You can watch, donate, and celebrate the arts tomorrow at 7 on WREL or wherever you stream our signal. You can also donate now at bignightin.org. So, Jen, thank you so much for the information. Welcome to the area and continued success on this program.
Thank you so much.
Certainly.
All right, just coming up on 12:48 on your Wednesday. Plenty of time to get outside. It's a good day to do it. It's beautiful out there, a little chilly. You might need the jacket. Elizabeth Gardner has a look around town.
It's certainly nothing like yesterday, but it is beautiful out there. We're seeing lots of sunshine. This is a live look at Goldsboro, at Apex, at Durham, and, of course, at Chapel Hill. Chapel Hill, courtesy of Top of the Hill Restaurant. It's a little bit breezy, like we talked about at the beginning of the newscast, and we do still have high fire danger today. Of course, yesterday we had our cold front move in, and you can see all the blue color contours here indicating the cold air. That cold air is going to stick with us. I say cold. Temperatures are just going to be back to normal, upper 50s, low 60s for the next couple of days. And then I'm tracking that front. It's going to bring us some rain starting on Friday. It is March Madness, weather and basketball, 52 degrees if you're headed out to the Greensboro Coliseum. 7 o'clock, Boston College plays UNC. And at 9:30, it'll be 46 degrees as Virginia Tech takes on NC state. So weather looks fine. It's just a little bit chilly. Fortunately, all that's inside, of course. Here's the rain that's headed our way. Tomorrow will stay nice and dry, and we'll start to see the rain early on Friday morning. And this is a change from yesterday. The newer runs of the computer models are moving this in a little faster. So it looks like we will have a wet commute on Friday morning. We'll see the rain starting to taper off in the evening. Saturday looks nice and dry, but Sunday we're tracking the next system. These are going to come one after the other. This one starts to bring some rain in to the mountains by Sunday morning, and then late afternoon, the rain arrives here. Looks like it'll be a fairly wet Sunday night, and then at some point Monday, that starts to begin to push out, but it does look like we'll end up with a fairly wet commute on Monday morning as well. How much rainfall for Friday? Not a whole lot. We're looking at, you know, maybe a quarter of an inch or so, maybe even less than that. Futurecast not too excited about how much rain we'll see. And then for Sunday into Monday, it looks like we could see an additional half an inch to an inch. So that looks like the situation that'll bring us a bit more rain. Daylight saving time begins over the weekend as well. We spring forward, turn those clocks ahead. It's always a good time to change your smoke and carbon monoxide batteries. And yeah, here we go into, well, what will look like spring, but it won't feel like it. We'll be either side of 60 for Monday and Tuesday. Tomorrow morning, excuse me, for Wednesday and Thursday. Tomorrow morning, we're looking at some colder temperatures than we saw this morning. We'll be closer to freezing. Could be some frost on the windshields. And of course, I know farmers are watching very closely to see what's happening with these colder temperatures. The next time we'll be close to freezing will be Sunday morning. Now, it will be dry. We're not looking at any wintry precipitation. And then again on Tuesday morning, again, it will be dry then. So no wintry precipitation in our 7-day forecast. We definitely have cooler temperatures. Again, our normal high is 60. We'll be below 60 for afternoon highs, and it'll be chilly a number of mornings as well. But there'll be some sunshine on and off to get outside and enjoy.
Look forward to it, Elizabeth. Thank you. There's a pause in play when a dog ran out onto the field just for a little exercise. The adorable moment during a championship game that has everyone talking.
And here's a look at last night's winning Mega Millions numbers. Good luck.
We wrap things up with a look at a few of the headlines we're following for you today. The search continues for a missing teenage boy at Jordan Lake. A 15-year-old disappeared while jet skiing with his family. They say he was having a mechanical problem with the jet ski. A family member left to go get a tow rope, came back. The jet ski was there. The boy was gone. A search began last night and picked back up around 6:30 this morning. We'll bring you updates as that search continues.
Lee County deputies arrest a suspect in the deadly shooting outside Fat Junior's restaurant. Ermond Jones is accused of killing Calvin Lester Jr. Investigators say the two men worked at Caterpillar, not far from where the shooting happened. No word yet on what led up to that shooting. Jones is in the Lee County jail without bond.
The firefight continues in Fayetteville. 10 families had to be evacuated near Dudley Road. Firefighters set up a command center there last night. At this point, the fire has burned 100 acres. One home has minor damage. Firefighters say 90% of the fire is under control.
A soccer match in El Salvador came to a brief halt after a very good boy decided to get in on the action. He was dedicated. The dog ran out onto the field during the match between the Philadelphia Union's match against Alazana. He bolted straight for the ball. An official quickly ran over, picked up the ball, and walked the dog off so the game could resume. The dog didn't seem bothered by it one bit. He just wanted to play. See a ball and he wants to play.
That's perfect segue into our pet of the day, a 9-year-old beauty who is just as sweet as they come. Tiger, a girl. She loves nothing more than curling up in a warm lap and getting all the pets and cuddles she deserves. Tiger prefers the company of humans to other cats, except for her sister, Baby. Tiger's looking for a calm and quiet home where she can relax and feel comfortable. If you'd like to meet her in person, just fill out an application on the Cat Angels website.
Reading is fundamental, but there's more than just books at one local library. From podcasts to seeds for your garden, today on WRL News at 4, we look at the things Durham's library offers to its locals.
Carolina Panthers donated $250,000 to one high school in North Carolina. The NFL team took a trip to Rockingham County for the groundbreaking of Reidsville High School's new field. They awarded $250,000 to the school in support of a $1.5 million renovation project. The first-class facility field will be named after Coach Jimmy Teague. Teague led the Reidsville Rams to multiple state championships since 1992. NBC News Daily is up next on WRAL, your next local newscast in 30 minutes.
And you can get breaking news anywhere, anytime with the WRAL News app. Have a great day.
Keep watching WRAL News over the Air Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.